started. So welcome to our second meeting of the Management Commentary Consultative Group. Hans sends his apologies. He will be joining us later this morning. But with that, let me pass over to Matt.
Right, morning everyone, and thank you particularly to those who've attending who are in the middle of their reporting cycles, because I realise quite how much of a burden this is, so thank you very much. We're going to start and go straight into deck one, which Marie-Claire will introduce. But just before we do that, I just wanted to position things a bit for you. So a lot of the discussion last time was around objectives for the management commentary, and that's provided a sort of a direction for us that hopefully you can see being pushed through in the materials you've had for today. In particular, and this is in the appendix to deck one, if you were interested in following it, the paragraphs A3 sort of set a direction for us in terms of reporting on shorter term information, that's sort of trends and factors affecting financial and operational performance, and then medium and longer term information, that's trends and factors that could affect the future development of the business and management of the features that are important for the future success of the business. So those objectives have sort of formed the structure for today's discussion. I also just want to emphasise a couple of things sort of carrying over from the last discussion that are probably, we're not, you won't see explicit in the illustrative drafting we've provided, because we think it needs saying once in the practice statement rather than multiple times. But just a reminder, the expectation is the management commentary is prepared through the eyes of management. So that means we're not asking management to hunt for information that they're not aware of. This is information they are aware of. And secondly, the discussion of materiality is important. If the requirements we put down for performance reporting are interpreted too broadly, actually you'll start to lose the value of the information reported. But equally, we didn't want to say in every paragraph only report the material things. So we're relying on the fact that we will have a clear statement on what we mean by materiality and how to apply it up front, rather than repeating it at every phase throughout. The other point, just coming back to the objectives discussion, you might have been looking for wording around stewardship in the material we sent to you. I hope you can see that stewardship considerations are addressed implicitly in the material. That's what we sought to do, rather than making explicit statements on stewardship. But obviously, if you feel that that needs to come out more strongly, then please do raise that. The second thing I just wanted to say is the link to stream three, the next stream of our discussions. Those of you with sort of more logical minds than me, some of you have pointed out that perhaps it would have been more logical to have the discussion of strategy, business model and operating environment and risks before we have the discussion of performance. We've done it this way round because we think talking about performance really will focus the mind. But in practice, when we write the practice statement, we'd expect to be covering those foundational aspects, business model, etc., first, and then building off that into performance. So some of the things we cover today, you might think, well, why is that not raised? And it's because we're anticipating covering it in the next stream. But again, if you've got any concerns there, please do raise them. And there are also areas where, such as sort of capital allocation strategy, where we touch on the performance reporting aspects of that in today's session, but we may well be coming back to it from a strategy perspective in the next session. So there is a degree of overlap that's inevitable with the way in which we approach the drafting of the practice statement. So I think a couple of themes for today we're likely to see, and I very much encourage you to raise sort of points around there. Firstly, have we got the right structure for approaching the disclosures in a logical manner? And secondly, are we striking the right balance in terms of providing guidance that will help to close the gaps in reporting practice without straying too far into prescription that could result in the reporting of the wrong information? So just with those opening thoughts, I'll sort of hand over to Marie-Claire to introduce the main deck.
So good morning. So we'll go through some of the main points we cover in slide deck one. And as Matt has mentioned, we have considered the feedback we received from you in the September meeting to develop the materials for today, and also we'll be considering them for our recommendations to the board. So I would like to start by highlighting three areas which we covered in stream one in our discussions, and that was forecast information, where we noted your concerns that there could be a possible interpretation that the practice statement is asking for forecast to be provided, but we will be discussing situations where the entity has already published forecasts, both inside and outside the management commentary, and what it should present in relation to them, and that's what we're expecting to cover in the practice statement, and we're not anticipating to go beyond that. Another area was verifiability, which is an enhancing qualitative characteristic of the in the conceptual framework. It's of course applicable to management commentary as well. And in respect of performance metrics, for management's estimates and interpretations, we think verifiability can still be supported by guidance, which we'll be providing, such as providing clear descriptions of what is being provided, and as well the basis and sources for those interpretations or estimates. And then another area was purpose, which we will be touching upon later this afternoon in our discussion as well, in relation to the business model. So moving on to slide five, I would like to emphasize those elements of the discussion related to the objective of management commentary, which will be relevant for today's discussion. So we will be focusing on information useful for assessing the entity's future net cash inflows and also implicitly management stewardship of the entity's economic resources. And we will not be asking for information that makes predictions of future outcomes. We'll also be looking at matters covering the short to the long term, including the trends and factors that arose in the current period, as well as those that could affect future performance. We will look at resources and relationships in the business model, which are critical for success, and the related opportunities and risks. Of course, the strategy for addressing these matters and the progress in implementing the strategy. So based on the current practice statement, we recognize that more detailed guidance is needed to apply this consistently to reporting performance, position, and progress. So we'll be exploring our proposals today in more detail. So the existing practice statement, as I've mentioned, provides guidance at a high level, and we are looking to address some of the challenges, which we described more in slide seven. So we think that currently the scope and relevance of information currently reported does not always fully address users' needs, particularly on long-term prospects, and sometimes perhaps an incomplete picture of performance is provided. And sometimes where certain measures are provided, they may not always be relevant. There is also questionable verifiability and selective identification and discussion of measures. And sometimes their reporting may not be so helpful for users to make decisions, such as not providing comparatives. On slide nine, we have the structure of the guidance that we are proposing for today. So Yelena will be discussing slide deck two, and we'll first start with explaining the amounts in the financial statements. So this will provide a basis for understanding the entity's ability to generate cash flows in the future. So, for example, by explaining non-recurring items, And we'll also be understanding the trends in the entity's performance. So, for example, constant currency analysis. Yelena will also be covering analysis of matters that affected the entity's current period financial and operational performance and position, including assessing performance against forecasts. And then Matt, this afternoon, in slide deck 3, will cover analysis of matters that could affect the future development of financial and operational performance, such as market share, and matters that could affect the resources and relationships that the business model depends on for success, for example, customer satisfaction and retention. So, the analysis and explanation of matters affecting the entity's current and future performance and position and its progress are, of course, inevitably related to the entity's business model, the operating environment, and the strategy that we will be discussing in Stream 3. So there may be some overlap between the different content elements of the management commentary. Mm-hmm. But we are not asking for repetition of matters, but obviously we go back to the principle we discussed in Stream 1, which is narrative coherence. So if something is important in relation to the business model, we'll be expecting that there will be the related performance measures on those features. And again, then we would expect a description of the implications of the performance trends we have seen. It is also worth remembering that the management commentary complements the financial statements. So as well, there may be cross-reference to notes and explanations in the financial statements. So before we move on to the questions, I would just like to remind you about the other principles which will be relevant for today's discussion. And so for reporting specifically on performance, position, and progress. And again, as Matt mentioned, we won't be repeating these for each content element we're describing, but if certain emphasis is needed, we will bring that into the discussion. So I guess we can move on to the questions, which are on slide 13. And first, we would like to ask if you agree with the challenges which we have identified related to reporting performance, position, and progress, or are there any others that we need to consider? And then if you agree with the overall approach to the structure of the guidance, how we address narrative coherence, and the application of the other principles.
Okay. So to respond to all three questions in one go, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Who would like to kick off? I think Andreas had it.
It was sticky. That's an insight. So I would concentrate my remarks not on the first question, because I agree that these are the challenges, but have a few comments as regards the remainder of the deck. I will start on slide 10 with the last two points that you mentioned there. The aim in today's discussion, you say, is to support the provision of information about performance, position, and progress that aligns with what the entity itself considers important and users' information needs. And I was wondering what that end means. Does it mean as well as, or as confined by, or with particular reference to? So because if we say, our starting assumption is that the report shall be provided through the eyes of management, then I think the first one is self-evident. But where do the user's information needs come in? So is that a mitigating factor? Is that a condition? Is that an extra? I think we probably need to be a bit more explicit as to what do we mean by and, because it currently just reads as an enumeration. So you provide your view, but if you haven't covered anything that's of interest to the outside world, so please go on. Is that what is meant? I suppose not.
Okay. Perhaps I'll just clarify the intent there.
Sure.
It sounds like we need to have a look at the wording. But so the intent comes back to this idea of matters and information. So the matters are the things that management considers to be important to the future of the business. The information is the information that a user would need to assess those matters and make decisions around them. So that's the intent, but perhaps that's not quite clear enough.
Yeah, I think it's probably a wording issue then as we come to the drafting later on. My second point is on slide 11, where I think you parked neatly a very important assumption, which is on the left-hand side down at the bottom. The starting assumption is that management commentary will be included in the same reporting package as the financial statements. Because I think that's relevant in a number of points. Firstly, it addresses the point of duplication of information. Secondly, it has an impact on linkage of information, because if you divorce the two elements, you probably would be giving more leeway in what management could report on. But if you say you tie it inherently to the rest of the financial package, then obviously you can't just divorce the principles that are being adhered to in the management commentary completely from the rest. But I also urge you to think about issues of auditability. Because, in my jurisdiction, the management commentary is audited, and it is audited with reasonable assurance. So the degree doesn't differ between the financial statements and the PAC. But we may be the odd man out, and that may not be the case everywhere. So I think we need to be cognizant that if there is different levels of verifiability or auditability, that might have an impact on this one. Lastly, on slide 12, you list the principles, and I would just like to remind us that I think when we discuss these principles, and I think specifically completeness and neutrality, we had a little concern as to what do we mean by complete and what do we mean by neutral. And if I start with neutral, I mean through the eyes of management, could it ever be neutral? Neutral just in the sense, please don't only report on the rosy things, but also report on the other side, which I think is meant here. But neutrality obviously can't be provided if you say the prime principle is through the eyes of management, then inherently that can't be completely neutral. So if an unrelated third party would report on the same things, they probably would have a different understanding of neutrality. So probably we need to be specific as to in what way could neutrality differ here in management commentary versus neutrality in the financial statements. And the same probably goes for completeness. I think complete in the sense, yeah, you report on everything that is material for an understanding of the current position and the future and the risk and all the things that relate to it. But obviously completeness in a financial statements thing has a different meaning, because you do have a starting point and an end point. Whereas the management commentary, especially if you peek into the future, is theoretically open. And what does complete mean in that sense? Does it have a natural stop somewhere? And I just want to remind us that probably we need to think about if we adhere to the same principles. Yeah, they are the same principles, but probably with a slightly different meaning as we use them in the financial statements. And I park other comments like forward information, as I pointed out to you yesterday for the second slide.
Can I just on yeah. auditability?
Yes.
Is your feeling from what you've read that there should be explicit reference to auditability, or is it that we need to do more within the wording to support the auditability of the information we're asking for?
I wouldn't say that this is a condition. I think we just need to be cognizant if we are setting out principles, especially reporting requirements in management commentary, and think about should these be better parked in management commentary or perhaps alternatively in the notes to the financial statements, then there is an audit impact on that. Mm. So I give you an example. If you're talking about a risk analysis, you could say part of today's risk analysis is covered by IFRS 7, where the closed disclosures go into the notes. If we think of something similar, say on operational risks, that would probably be parked in management commentary. Yet, whilst the requirement may be very similar, the audit impact is quite different.
Okay. Liliana?
Yes, thank you. My first comment, I agree with generally with slide 7 relating to what are the the issues or the challenge with reporting performance. Nevertheless, I would like to, a little bit like Andrea said, to drive your attention on the point of the different legislations relating to verifiability, the different legislation and different environment. We experienced the publication of the management commentary or the management report together with the financial statement. In Europe, the obligation is that the auditors pronounce themselves of about the coherence or the what is said in the management report is not in contrary to what is put it in the financial statement, and this is a audit obligation. I wonder about verifiability and the audit role on all that. I know that verifiability is further than that, but what that will depend, in my opinion, everything parts from the business model. That will depend of which type of company you are talking about and what is the level of maturity of such a company in the life of the business model. When in slide 6, you were talking about management interpretation, okay, management view of the business, but I wonder if a mature business in a well-established business model need to repeat themselves of what will be the next year or what will be the provision, except if there is something that you need to drive the attention on. It is, should be not something as a boilerplate thing. That will depend. I will try to put into context such a requirement of the view of on the future. And a startup may have needs to pronounce themselves about the future, but a mature company themselves, we will still be there next year. I don't know how the results will still be there next year. It's not very, very easy to put in words. The other thing relating to the verifiability, it is important to distinguish what is financial information that need to be coherent or came from the financial statement, and if not, may a reconciliation, you already put it in there. And what is non-financial information on own production information for industrial companies, what is the verifiability on that? There are figures, they are came from the production itself. At some extent in France, some extra financial informations need to be audited also. But I think that is not the case for everybody, and it is really a question, what is the verifiability of numbers that come from the own production of the company?
Just on that, because verifiability is obviously a sort of significant concern for people, and it came up a lot last time. I guess we sort of draw a distinction between asking for information to be provided in a form where a user can assess the extent of the sort of reliability of the information, whether it represents an opinion, an estimate, something from a system, or actually something from the audited financial statement. So we've sought to bring that distinction out in the drafting, but we're not seeking, perhaps we should, but we're not seeking to ask for verification or sort of address, take things beyond the position of actually just presenting the quality of information in a transparent way.
Mm-hmm. Larissa.
Thank you. Actually, I have 3 points, and they're very similar to the ones that Andreas picked up, so we seem to be passionate about the same things. Slightly different take on it, though. The first one on slide 10, about the user's information needs. My question is, how would the company and the auditors determine that? Because in my experience, companies, and it actually goes to the second point about the inherent bias, our neutrality. Companies tend to ignore things that they don't want to publish. So I do think this is a tricky one. There are ways to solve it, but I would challenge the management team through the wording in the statement to actually be able to demonstrate in a way that they have taken into account user needs. And this is what we think, I don't think, is sufficient. You can get it from the analyst community, you can get it from your shareholder base, you can get it from your auditors to a certain extent. So I think there are relatively easy solves for that, but I would be a little bit more specific. On page 12, the same comment on neutrality, I think management teams are inherently biased. I actually don't know how we solve this one, because you are going to end up with clashes between your auditors primarily. But that one, I do think it's important. I do think we need to elaborate. I don't know how. So I suppose it's a question. And then the last one, verifiability, and this ties in with auditability as well. But I would challenge that we go one step further. It's one thing for the numbers to be audited when the auditors have insight to the calculation. In the companies in my coverage universe, not a single one calculates ROE in the same way. And you would think that ROE is a relatively easy number. So the amounts are audited, they're published in the financials, where they tend to massage the numbers in the E. So anything that requires insight into additional information, I would challenge that they actually publish at least the concept for the calculation, if not the actual numbers, because on my numbers, I can be as much as a third out, and that is a big on a return number. Mm-hmm. So that'll tie in both. So those were my three main thoughts.
I think perhaps we should come back to that last one in the context of the next deck and the overview of performance, because I think potentially that's very relevant. In terms of understanding of user needs, again, this, yeah, something we sort of fall back on the discussion we had last time. But are you saying that asking management to assess what would be relevant to understand future cash flows, that's not enough on its own, and we should go further and ask management to have had a dialogue or sort of have understood what the investor universe is saying about them?
In short, yes, but slightly different take. So if we're going to put in here that we need management's view, plus we want metrics, we want them to take into account user needs, then I do think we need to be a little bit more specific, because how do we know what the user needs are? And management teams, especially management teams that want to hide something, are not going to acknowledge the user needs that paint a less rosy picture than they would have liked otherwise. So it's actually protecting the downside risk of the user of the financial statements, because the ones that aren't in trouble aren't going to have a problem disclosing that.
So is it basically saying, what's the process that you've gone through to work out what your user needs are?
Ask them. It'll be interesting to see what the answer is. Because if the answer is, this comes from comments in our meetings with investors, I would challenge them that is insufficient. Any listed company will have analyst coverage. You can ask the analyst, you can ask the auditors, because they would do similar companies, listed or unlisted, in the same space. So it's a relatively easy solve.
Yes. I mean, the concern there from last time was that you would then create a defence of you didn't ask for the information, and perhaps users aren't in a position to understand that they need information on a subject. So it's maybe... it's whether the two would operate in parallel that perhaps you're saying we should think about.
See, I quite liked last time's conversation. I don't think it's a far less palatable solution for preparers than the users of financial statements. But if we're going to go soft on what we discussed the last time, then we should probably take this line out here, and I think that would be very unfortunate. But I don't think they can coexist at the moment without giving a little bit more detail.
Deepa.
Thank you. In response to question three, a comment on the overall approach. And I think the challenge here is one of the most important things to draw out is what's the difference between talking about performance here compared to the financial statements. And for me, it's really that the management commentary is about providing management view on the numbers, whereas financial statements I see as a standardised prescription. And I think my word of caution would be just to not to stray too far into making this part a standardised, prescriptive basis for performance reporting, because we have that in the IFRS. And linked to that, comment on slide 9. So again, we're talking a lot about alternative performance measures and similar comments. So what I've heard is that, part of the use of alternative performance measures is that they do give the management views and do have the flexibility. So again, just I think it's just the way this sort of it's set out in terms of illustrative examples that perhaps that doesn't become the template for APMs and these become standardised metrics. And then the other point linked to that is I think it's important somehow to draw out the non-recognised measures of performance. So here I'm thinking of wider intangibles that potentially could impact your future financial performance or position. So considering it from that angle as well.
So you feel that's not getting enough emphasis in the wording we've got at the moment?
I'd agree with you.
Yeah.
Merrick?
Thank you. And I guess many of the comments that have been made would sort of do link to some of the things I wanted to talk about. But the point of view I come from is, as you know, sort of auditability primarily. So forgive me for focusing on those things. Slide 12 includes the principles, or at least includes a series of principles. And as we have looked at the audit of these types of statements in our project at the IAASB, we've got quite a strong focus on many of the things that are on this schedule. And one of the things we've been trying to do is relate the similar concepts we have in auditing to what we're thinking of as the characteristics of useful information, which to some extent, this doesn't follow the pattern of those terms, but it includes many of them, but it also misses out many of them. And certainly one of the things that I would conclude from what we've done so far on the auditing side is that all of these characteristics are quite important aspects of performing an audit. If the information doesn't contain or doesn't reflect these characteristics, the general characteristics of useful information, then it's going to be harder for an auditor to be able to conclude, and actually in some cases to take on an audit assignment. I'm calling it audit. You're familiar with the term assurance, but but just for simplicity. So I did want to pick up a couple of things. One of them was the conversation we've had so far about neutrality. I think in terms of neutrality, it would be odd if the term through the eyes of management meant that something would result in something not being neutral. Because frankly, if that's the case, then we would be saying, well, it's all right to produce information that is biased. And I can't see how that could possibly be right. And actually, from an auditing point of view, that's a critical piece of what the auditor has to look at. So I think it's important to explain how those two concepts, through the eyes of management and the concept of neutrality, are reconciled. I think they're perfectly reconcilable, by the way, and I don't want to go on, but I think they are, and I'm happy to say more about that if we want to. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's largely about how you select information, not about whether or not something that somebody, even if it's through the eyes of management, in other words, you can select the information in a way that is neutral. And it is to some extent auditable because management uses information, and therefore an auditor can look at how they use information, what information they have, so can come to conclusions. The second point I wanted to make is that behind all of these things, in order to make judgments about them, the purpose of the reporting is really critical, because it's only in the context of the purpose that you can actually apply these concepts on the schedule. And so I go back to really what you say is the purpose. And I wonder if it is simply about evaluating the future cash flows. It seems to me a lot of this information is actually also enabling, as a first step, perhaps with an ultimate goal of evaluating future cash flows, but the first step is to evaluate the performance of the entity in the past and its current condition. It's on that that you build your evaluation of the future. And I think that's missing from the description of the purpose of the information. But it's not necessarily missing from what you ask people to provide information about. So I'm not sure I'm asking for something new that's not in the document, but it does seem to be missing from the purpose, and therefore
reordering.
It could perhaps be clearer. On slide 10, it's been picked up a number of times. The language on the right-hand side in the two bullets, one and two, what the entity itself considers important and user information needs. And I link that back to, you know, one of the main concerns is that, frankly, in producing these types of reports, preparers don't achieve inclusion of information as a whole that is useful to the intended users of the report. And that's really your first concern, I suppose. But it breaks down into a number of areas. And one of the most difficult things we have heard that people do is to identify the matters that are relevant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this language here is very similar to, or it raises similar questions to some of the things that we've been looking at. There's language used in practice which calls the selection of the matters a materiality process. I don't know if many people come across that term, but certainly in broader reporting in these areas, people call it a materiality process. And it's probably a bit of a misnomer, that term, but it essentially means picking out the items, the matters, if you want to call them that, that are relevant. Now, relevance isn't on your principles on slide deck page 12. It's sort of implied by completeness to some extent, but it's sort of silent on relevance. Nobody would have thought that was important. It's this concept of narrative coherence is really important. I'm not sure that is actually reflected explicitly anyway in the characteristics of useful information in the framework. So I wonder if it's actually something that goes beyond what you currently have in the characteristics of useful information. It is pretty important, in fact, and so I do agree with that. But I don't think completeness is just about that. It's actually also about meeting these two points that you have here on slide 10. And the conundrum we have found is that some people think that stating something like what the entity considers important is an alternative to the concept of relevance. And I can't see how that can be the case, again, if you want to achieve information that's useful to users. The primacy must be surely users' information needs. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is reconcile how different frameworks, not just yours, think about this. One of the most difficult things, it seems, is to reconcile these two concepts that you look at something which is important in a particular context. I would say here it's business model strategy, if that's the context for what's important. But is that enough? I mean, logically, if you got those judgments right as management and if you got those judgments right as users, the two things ought to be the same. There's not really any reason why they should be different. But it does look here like they're different. Now, of course, there can be differences because users may not have the information that management has to enable them to make those judgments. I'm not sure that's very often the case, but they may not, certainly at one level. Something to reconcile these two is pretty important, and I think it's reconciling it to the concept of how you produce relevant information. And for that reason, I do think relevance would be well placed on this schedule. My very last point is, the other one I miss from here is accuracy. And accuracy is quite important to an auditor in this area because we're talking about information which often has a lot of uncertainty in its measurement, but also if you're talking about evaluations, it's evaluation. If you're talking about descriptions in your ability to describe something, So there is a lot of uncertainty. And with that uncertainty, we know that from financial reporting concepts that uncertainty, you know, ultimately, if you can't eliminate that uncertainty, if it's not information, if it's really information uncertainty, i.e. a lack of information, then all you can do is describe the nature of the uncertainty, describe how you approached making the description, limitations. You have many of those things referred to in the guidance already, I think. But I am missing, you know, something here that would help the preparer to understand, you know, generally how they should approach the concept of uncertainty and accuracy in that context, i.e. precision in that context. Those are the sort of main sort of general points. But
okay, so a sort of big picture view of approaching uncertainty in addition to the sort of slightly more detailed points we've got in there.
Yes, because in principle terms, it's far more important. I mean, it's very important in financial reporting these days, no doubt, and I have no doubt about that. But here it's going to be very, very important. Most of what is really going to be insightful for users is going to be things that are uncertain because they're forward-looking, and explaining how you approach that and what makes the information accurate in those circumstances, i.e. properly measured using a basis that's been described and, you know, includes disclosures about whatever. Those are the sorts of principles that I think will be helpful both to preparers and then make it auditable. Thank you.
Maybe a very quick comment on the principles on slide 12, just to reassure that things are actually not missing. So that was not intended to be a complete inventory. And of course, you know, free from error, which is what you refer as accuracy, yes, is a principle in the conceptual framework. And also relevance essentially is represented by materiality, because materiality is defined as any specific aspect of relevance. But we will, of course, need to think about how best to articulate all those concepts in the context of management commentary as opposed to in the context of financial statements. But it's there, and it's on our minds as well.
Can I just pick up on your phrase, the intended users of the report? Because I wonder if that's where there's a mismatch. It ties into relevance again, that, you know, certainly in terms of this project, it's been very clear that this is to serve those who use the financial statements. But is there a mismatch in that in the minds of companies, actually the users of the narrative report could be a much wider set of that? The document in their minds often has a different purpose. And that's where perhaps we get information that may not always be relevant in terms of those who use financial statements coming into the narrative and expanding the narrative, if anything.
Yes, I think that's probably... There is that confusion these days because people don't necessarily work in a simple model where all they have to do is follow the R4S requirements. So, you know, you may have other responsibilities as a company under law that drive you to think about other users too. So for that reason, I mean, we think of it more broadly than that in principle, because people who report... may have to follow rules that the audit has to check to that go further than that. But nonetheless, it should be possible to extend that concept of users to other groups if they're relevant and if that's something that you have to do. But I think one of the things that means the guidance probably ought to be very clear about the discussion about users. It may be right to say that this guidance only talks about users within that context, but maybe it has to recognise that in practice, preparers may have other responsibilities that drive it beyond. And then a second point on that, I would say, is should the report not include a very clear statement about who the intended users are, so that people reading the report really understand what that is? If there are different categories of users, and quite different categories of users, do you need to identify what information is intended for different users? It's a complicated area because it makes the reporting complicated. But
of course, Ben,
thanks. Just a few additional comments on the. So this is from the point of view of a user, and I'm mainly large public equity. So. There is a case of information fluff. So non-material information, which gets padded out a lot, is, it's there, we cope with it. The less of that, the better, from my point of view. The second is linkage to other things. So particularly even within management commentary, again, as how a user would do this, I would read usually the quarterly transcripts plus what happens at an investor day or any other management pronouncements. And usually those have come under the prepared remarks, and often there has a lot of similarities with that. And I'll be looking for linkages of what they've said every quarter and on the year to see how they added up or not. So that's it. And increasingly, though, again, with certain companies, I'm now getting commentary and sometimes financial numbers not put together, and that explicitly separated, which is problematic for me. That's we do reconcile it. We go back to company. You know, we solve it, but it is a difficulty. On this question of neutrality, again, from a user, I know what, you know, management do tend to think rosy, like they may think, they are thinking it from those views. I typically ask for balance. So I don't use the word neutral. I just say, is there a plan B? What's the balance? You know, if it's the risk or the opportunities, or if the risk side, the other thing, which has a notion of neutrality, but, you know, we do need that. But it's just, what's your balance on that? And that is because I do think it is true that management teams do sit on information. There's a lot about why that would be. They might say it's for commercial reasons, the why it is. And if it's information that I think is important, then generally I'm using three or four other lenses to ask for this information, which I often get, although not always. One is, are you reporting this information or this commentary into the board? And if you are talking to this to the board, why aren't you talking it to me? I found this other information reported by other companies, maybe in other sectors or other things. And if it's material and commentary for those companies, can you explain to me why it's not material for you? And it might be that the case is sometimes no or whatever. A third is me. I could give a reasonable argument for why I have this. And then actually sometimes, but probably my last one is I'll actually refer to some other standard setters or standards and say, look, this is the kind of information which has been requested here, and therefore don't you think you're kind of should be showing this? Again, that can be within the jurisdiction and all of those type of things. And it comes out a little later on than that, because actually the future statements or some things like that, even though I know there's kind of a lot of uncertainty around that, are sometimes some of the most useful things. And I, particularly with the larger companies, I don't really know a company or management team which doesn't do a scenario analysis of some sort, often with balance within that, because they've got to set their own budgets in an uncertain world. But it's actually really rather rare that they share that with investors for all sorts of reasons. But increasingly, I mean, I guess this is through the lens of climate, but there are other many, many other lenses where that's useful information. And actually, in conversation, they will often share elements of that with you in a spoken sense. The last bit on this, because, you know, you are tying it into financial statements, I often find this is a very valuable area to comment on aspects which are very difficult to measure. I would say some things are very impossible to measure, but are really important to the entity now, future, historic. I mean, there's lots of categories on here, but the one I would probably highlight is culture. I don't think any management team or anything doesn't think that culture ties into purpose and all of these other things are not really important. And actually, every company has individual cultures, the strengths and weaknesses. And we will often ask teams, you know, where do you think weaknesses are? How do you think that might be improved? What are your aspirational points on culture? You know, innovation, agility, all of these type of things. And if in all of this, that kind of conversation is lost, then that's quite detrimental to me. And I have to get that. I have to get that back. Often it does come in within human resources management or one of these other capitals, which you can get that discussion, because we know we're not in a case where we've got agreed standards on how to measure human capital, manufacturing capital, social capital, however you'd like to describe it. But we also know that there are qualitative or commentary ways of linking that and talking about that, both in balance and where it might be in the future and how that is. And that's very useful information. Which I'm constantly asking teams that, and I much prefer that rather than fluff, although sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the two.
Okay, so potentially that would suggest more prompts around identification of what the relevant information would be.
And I mean, you know, in the practical world, there will be, we probably, users and management teams will somewhat disagree some of the time on that. And then that's a conversation about what should be or not. But in practice, a lot of users feel that companies sometimes hide behind this information under the guise of competitive disclosure. Sometimes that's true, sometimes that's not. And also because actually it might be that non-disclosure of important matters, maybe material matters, is easier to deal with than disclosure of that matter, which might be more controversial. Say a scenario analysis where you reveal what your plan B is, say. Most management teams I know would be very, very nervous of that. Although if I think it's important, I just say, is there a plan B? They invariably go, yes. And I say, well, how good is that plan B? So you might have that. And that particularly comes into, for instance, there's a lot of talk now on succession planning. That's, you know, this is where it would come in. No one doesn't think, you know, do you have a plan for your senior management team of succession? That's very important. And it rarely comes up in this commentary now, although it should, but then has to come up in conversation, which they then will say, yes, obviously this is really important. Yes, we do have a plan B, and then give you some elements of what that plan B might be.
Massimo?
Yes, there are two quick comments as preparers. First of all, I want to reiterate what Matt said at the beginning, the conciseness. I think it's important to say explicitly conciseness is really important here, not only for the real consumption of this information, but also considering the cost that this will imply. And linked with that, I think the link with other documents, think about the risk report and the sensitivity analysis that you can find the risk report. But even here, you are asking for sensitivity. So try to link the different reports. This is first comment. The second comment is somehow linked with the verifiability and also what Ben said before. It's about the governance of the approval process where the company should explain how the management commentary was set up internally, who approved that, how they manage all the information that they are going to deliver. And I think this is a quick fix, but it will be very important for all the stakeholders to understand exactly the process behind that.
Alexandra.
Thank you. A few comments on the question. So, first of all, on the first question, I agree. I think the challenges have been rightly identified, and very much like the approach to build on existing frameworks. In that respect, I might suggest that for future developments of this project, you also have a look at the guidelines that ESMA issued on alternative performance measures, because this is a source of guidance that is quite widely used in Europe. On the second question, I have few comments on these slide 12 about the principles, and I think obviously I agree with those principles that were discussed in stream one. I think what's needed for this stream or for the discussion on performance is to somehow go a step below explain how those principles apply to the actual presentation of performance and progress and position of the entity. So how, for example, neutrality links to presenting performance. In our guidelines, again, we have principle of the measures, performance measures being unbiased, and I think this has been touched on already. We also have a principle on prominence, and I think you have it somewhere else in the slide deck for today. So I think it would be helpful to explain, perhaps with a different table, how those high-level principles apply to the actual performance and position presentation. I think one principle that perhaps is missing, although that came again in the discussions also last time, is understandability. to some extent. And that links, for example, for the specificities of the performance measures to being understandable in how you define the measures, in the glossary, for example, to make sure that everyone understands how the measures are prepared, and also make sure that the labels that you use are meaningful. And again, I know that you address this later on, but having a sort of single source for all the principles applying to all the measures, perhaps it would be helpful. One comment on neutrality based on the other comments that were made. I think in the discussion later on, you make a distinction between opinions and somehow objective facts. And I think that is another way of making sure that the information presented is neutral, because if I clearly set out what is an opinion as compared to what are objective facts, that is also another way of giving the management view on performance, but on the other hand, giving a sort of warning to the reader that that is an opinion, is not necessarily a substantiated fact. On question three, other aspects, I read the references to forward-looking information in the document and in the other documents somehow as downplaying the relevance of forward-looking information. I know that was not the intention. You just wanted to clarify that forecasts are not needed or not necessarily needed. But I think it is important to have forward-looking information. I know that that's quite obvious as a statement, but it seemed to me that this was quite a bit downplayed in the discussion of for today. One point is perhaps minor one on terminology again, on this operational information that is a sort of synonym for pre-financial, non-financial. I struggle quite a bit with calling operational information or operational performance something that is commonly understood as being non-financial performance or information. So I don't know how to solve or to please everyone with a common term.
We don't.
I think that that is something that could be looked at again. And that is it. Thanks.
So just to clarify on the principles, your feeling is that we should push them down more into the wording on performance than we have done in the illustrative drafting?
I think in the illustrative drafting, you have bits and pieces of the different principles. There is no single source of principles specific to the performance, presentation of performance. And that makes it difficult to understand whether one principle applies to one piece of the guidance and another one doesn't, because it's not explicitly mentioned. So I think that that's the issue.
Thank you. Rodrigo.
Got a couple of comments. The first one somehow relates to something you mentioned earlier, Nick, which has to do with the primary users. I understand that we don't want to repeat the principles within the document, throughout the document, and I understand that the primary users are obviously the same, but I'm really not 100% sure that the degree of assumed knowledge, expected knowledge, when we talk about business and operational side, is 100% equal to the degree of knowledge of the general conceptual framework. So I think there's in item A4 of the draft, there's room to reinforce the concept of what assumed knowledge is within that area. Another comment relates to some positive reinforcements. I believe that it's similar to what was done in IAS 1. I believe that the part with respect to cross-referencing should be reinforced as well. I mean, I believe there should be some positive sentences about the use of cross-referencing to avoid and to achieve conciseness, which is something that Massimo has mentioned as well. And also, it would be helpful in terms of auditability if we have some positive statement about the use of cross-referencing. One other comment relates to the general context of performance reporting. I understand that we, in item A1B of the draft, we talk about the use of qualitative and quantitative. I definitely think there should be some kind of guidance that management should make its best effort to quantify, or else we could be moving things towards excessive qualitative information and some kind of leeway for management not to quantify things that should be quantified, or at least try to. I understand the idea of not being prescriptive, but I really think that should at least some soft language about some kind of preference for quantitative comments. And the last one is in slide 12, when we talk about the principle of aggregation. It's a comment that I made in our last meeting in context of materiality. It's difficult to address this one, but I think somehow we should try to address trying not to use aggregation as an excuse to bury information that is relevant within that. I mean, it's the same comment with respect to materiality, the fact that you can throw a lot of immaterial information as a way of burying material information inside that. And this has been explicitly addressed by the Brazilian SEC. They have kind of turned the use of immaterial information as an excuse to bury material information in the same level of omission some way. So this I believe this should be somehow addressed in the context of aggregation as well, which could be used inadvertently to bury relevant information.
Well, and is embedded very clearly in our new definition of materiality. So in some respects, once you're applying materiality to that, hopefully that's captured within that as well.
Yes.
Chris?
So thanks. So just broadly supportive on where we're heading, but a few specifics. So in terms of the three main challenges, no issue with those, but I did wonder whether comparability across entities might need to get drawn out. You could say it's buried within three, but it seemed to me that that was probably one of the fundamentals, was actually trying to make sure that people could compare entities and understand some of the things that were going on. And I think it picked up, I'm not quite sure who said it now, but someone mentioned that there's different ROE.
Yeah.
So that came up in a lot of the feedback to me, was that people have different views on these things. And so how actually you explain why you've chosen your measure is actually as important as the measure itself. So that aspect. If you move on to the slides 8 and 9, I think there's some, I think it's just the way we've worded it, but when we talk in 3.1, we talk about amounts included in the financial statements. I think there's a couple of issues with that wording. So one is, what do you mean by financial statements? Are you just meaning the performance statements, so that the key ones, or are you meaning the entire financial statements, which includes the notes? Because I think people have very, and the way it's defined in our accounting standards, it actually means both things. So I think people will get quite confused about what you're talking about there unless we really say up front what we mean.
And would you suggest clarifying that in terms of sort of top down?
Well, I think it needs to be all, because I think if what you're trying to do in management commentary is, for me, you're trying to pick out the bits of the financial statements, which is the notes and the actual statements themselves, what are the key things I need to tell you about? So it needs to be the whole picture, not. Okay. I wouldn't want people just going, I'm only going to explain to you what's in my P&L, my balance sheet, my cash flow statement. Because, for example, I would hope at some point, I'll hop on my hobby horse, intangibles. We're going to have some disclosures at least in the financial statements. And if that's not on the balance sheet and it's in the notes and we need to talk about them, I wouldn't want people missing that piece out. And then my next piece is, I think I get a bit confused on slide 9 between the two bits which I would consider the current performance. So if I think about management commentary, what I think I'm trying to do is say, what do I think as management has impacted my performance this year? So I think that's the matters, the red box, that seems to me to be the primary driver. I'm telling you how I see what's actually changed. And then I'm not sure what the blue box, the first box, actually is. Because again, to me, what I think I'm telling you about is what's the changes this year, or what are the things that were unusual, or what were the things that significant, probably shouldn't use that word, but what are, it just sort of needs, for me, it needs something to be a bit tighter, because otherwise I'm not quite sure what you're trying to make me tell you in the management commentary. I'm not sure whether that's helping, Matt. You're looking a bit...
No, I mean, we'll come on to this in the next section, but in principle, the blue box, the intent there is what's in the financial statement. So typically, in a lot of countries, that would be the chief financial officer's review, although the scope of those do vary, whereas the red box is intended to be the sort of the operational performance behind it, which would typically be the chief operating officer's view. But they both, yeah, one goes financial statements out and the other goes operating performance in. Whether that's a helpful distinction. Maybe not.
I might defer to the users on that one, but I think trying to make those two boxes a bit tighter about what you're actually trying to achieve. And I think being very careful, because I think, again, picking up on Deepa's comments, when you say amounts included in the financial statements, people will take that to be recognised. And I think we need to be very clear. We're not actually talking about just recognised. It is recognised and unrecognised. So I think if we can make that tighter. And I also agree on the comments about just your examples that we have here. They're very much tied into. They're tangible. So I think even just having examples about culture or climate change or some of those other things. I also think somehow we're going to have to put a line in the sand and say there are some things that will need to go into the financial statements and can't be just left in management commentary. So I think somehow we're going to have some signposts that say these are some of the areas where you need to think much more carefully about whether it actually should be in the financial statements. Yep, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, thank
you. Brent?
Just a few things. One of the ones that I had trouble with is to talk about short-term and long-term. I think short-term there might be agreement what it is, but I don't know if there's going to be agreement what long-term is.
Yes, just to be clear, I use that language for this group because we've been through the sort of discussion of, well, no. If you use those words, then you get into odd challenges of how do you define them. So we're not proposing to use those as labels, but okay. Loosely you would see what we're going to cover this afternoon as being medium long term, and what we cover in the rest of this morning as being shorter term, yeah, current performance next year.
Sure. I had the same observation as Rodrigo in terms of I don't think it didn't strike me that financial information users were defined the same here as they are in IAS 1. It struck me as being the management commentary was maybe shooting a little bit lower. That's how I read it, but for better or for worse. One of the things, or another thing, you know, to Andreas' comment and others talked about the slide about the information the company uses and that users need, okay? As before, let's not confuse the word need with the word want. Okay, we've just gone through an exercise where we've actually reached out to analysts. You know, what information do you guys would you like? And they didn't bother splitting between needs and wants. So I think that's an important distinction that we need to make. Also, listening to people a little bit, I think we're confusing neutrality and objectivity. In terms of the reporting, I don't think that, you know, I think those are very different terms. So I just, maybe we should be careful about how we use those terms was one of the thoughts. Also, again, to Andreas' comment, in my world, you can get a document with the MD&A and the management commentary and financial statements together, but in terms of how we file it with the regulators, they're separately filed. So I don't know that assumption about them being put together, I don't know that that's detrimental, but the reality of it is that they are not filed together.
But commonly are produced together, commonly.
In a hard copy format, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you can get an annual report file, but mm-hmm. but the norm is that you'd have an MD&A file and a financial statement file.
Okay. Larissa, you look like you would come back on user needs and wants.
In defense of the analyst community, what you want and what you need tends to change very quickly depending on what the company reports.
Yeah, and actually, the one point I just wanted to finish on that was that in terms of we're talking about relevance and materiality, that's not a static thing. That's a dynamic thing. You know, last night we were talking about, I don't know if people know about the spinning plates. You know, you put the rod and they spin the plate. Whichever plate is wobbling the most is your biggest risk or the most relevant. And you don't know from one week to the next which plate you have to spin or which one is wobbling, pardon me. So.
And also related to that, and it ties in with your comment about one of my personal favorites, intangibles. It's the understatement risk is what's not there. So you don't know which plate's wobbling.
No.
And which one's going to blow up. Thank you. The comment I actually wanted to make was on Ben's comments earlier on the fluff, which I'm not a big fan of, and conciseness would be very much appreciated. But then also on companies explaining what they do to address it. And it ties in very nicely with what we have on slide 9. Great example, customer retention. But specifically in the case of companies that have lost market share, we are very focused on regaining our market share. That tells me nothing. I would expect you to be very focused on remaining solvent. I would love if we can add and how. Because I find it's the how that's often lacking, and then they go hide behind, but that's competitive advantage. Now, half the time it's not. If you've lost a significant part of your customers, tell me how you're fixing it. Do you think it's an advertising problem? Is it a product problem? Is it a broker problem? Is it a quality problem? Tell me what you think the problem is. I may disagree, but at least I know where you're going. Another great example is anything that's if you have deteriorating operating ratios. We are in this document proposing that we ask them to discuss why. It actually comes up two places, and I don't think you can. It comes up under explain the amount included in the financials, but then two boxes down we go on to the future development, and I think one feeds the other. But don't tell me what the problem is. It's usually readily apparent. Tell me how you're going to solve it. Because if they're just going to tell us what it is, I'm not going to bother reading it.
And I think that's a good example of why, we might have discussed stream three first, because that strategy for addressing those issues should come out there. But the what we're trying to communicate with the wording is the two should be sort of inextricably linked, and that so if that needs to come across more clearly, then we should look at that.
I would very strongly argue for that, because I find that they'll tell us the what, which is completely useless. It's the how that's interesting, and that's what they're saying, but it's not required. Nothing here requires me to tell you how.
Could I just come back to your needs, wants point, Trent? and again, just sort of thinking about how we express that. It's an admirable objective, but the question is whether stating that is helpful, or whether we need to do more in the drafting to sort of support that distinction, whether you felt there were places where we were pushing into the wants area.
And this is being a little bit also to Merrick. I think it was Merrick's comment about, you know, you're producing a bunch of data or providing a bunch of data and not really answering the question. And maybe that's part of the key to unlocking the answer to your question is, you know, if people are asking for something, we really need to understand why they're asking for it, because it may not tell them what they think it's going to tell them. You know, One I just think about, for example, you know, if you look in IFRS 8 geographic disclosures at, you know, sales from foreign countries, that number in isolation doesn't really tell you much, but it's a required disclosure. So again, you know, somebody wanted that, but how are you going to use it? You know, what's the real need? I don't think the real need was answered by that.
So if we looked at consideration of user needs, it would have to be with that sort of proviso of it's not everything that's asked for, it's the things that you do recognize to be relevant.
And then under my breath, I'd also say, as long as it reduces our cost of capital.
Sandy?
I have a lot of thoughts on all that, but that wasn't the reason I raised my guard. I guess, you know, to me, the concept of neutrality here and the notion that, you know, examples of how this should be applied is really challenging for me in this context, because it seems antithetical in management commentary to ask them to be neutral, because it's their opinion and they're biased. It's their performance, right? So I struggle a little bit with, I get that in the concept of creating accounting principles, but in the concept of creating management commentary, inherently it's biased, right? And I think investors understand that. So we were having a little sidebar conversation about, is neutrality the right word? I looked it up. I don't think it's the right word. Balanced, maybe, I agree, but it's just, to me, it's not neutral. It's management's view, right? And they're biased. And you can see through the use of alternative performance measures that they're generally more positive. It can't always be that way, right? So to me, is it, how do you, I'm interested to see what the examples are so that I know exactly what that means. Because I think in the way that trained accountants use that term, and that use of that term in this document with its name seems a little inconsistent to me. That's just my view. On the needs versus want thing, I just can't resist. I think that the reality of it is that needs and wants are positional, right? And so if your geographic disclosures, to borrow that example, are so aggregated that you feel like there is more information there, so you ask for it, and maybe you learn it is or isn't useful. It's just that you have a sense that maybe there's more information content in that. So there may be a view that management says that's not needed, but an investor may need it because they don't have the view. They don't have the insight, right? So they can't make that decision quite as easily. So just a little food for thought on that. But neutrality is kind of my only thing in here that I'm sort of like.
I mean, just on that issue, I mean, I think it's human nature that there would be positive bias in this. We can't get away from that. My sense of using a word like balanced or neutrality is to try and rein that in a little bit and accepting you won't get to complete neutrality or complete balance, but without any kind of constraining factor or sense that, you know, there needs to be some thought to that, you'll just end up with that complete bias. So I think it's hard to precisely and specifically kind of say, right, bring that back to neutrality or balance, but somehow you need to say, you do need to think in that way, at least we'll give an attempt to do so.
I wonder here if it, part of the answer will lie in the distinction between facts and opinion, and whether the sort of expectation might be that the facts were neutral.
They could be alternative facts.
Fake news.
Where I live.
Okay, let's move on. Marie.
Yeah, thank you. I body with the challenges and the staff proposal. I just wanted to come back on the completeness and the narrative coherence. I think it's more narrative coherence than completeness, because completeness gives the impression that you have to give everything, whereas I think where we are focusing on is narrative coherence. And if you go back to slide 10, I think the left page of this slide where you focus on the linkage you should have and the fact that you should be coherent between what you consider that important and divided after in all part of what you communicate, which is the accounts, but also the management commentary, the slide deck, and all the elements. I think it's a way to reconcile the entities, what is important for the entity and the user need, because sometimes after the user is sort of unable to understand because something is really focused on one part of the financial communication and not on the other part. So that's where after he's asking for more because he cannot make this link. So I think it's really something that might help this linkage and this sort of coherence among all the financial communication, to have less tension between what the user considering needs and what the management wants to give.
Thank you.
So Ben, you have a final word on.
Tiny one, just to throw the example of that, at least from a user, it might not necessarily be a market problem to solve. So, for instance, say a company did lose market share, the information that we would then ask the company, often in Q&A after it, if the management commentary wasn't very sound, and then we would say, well, tell us about customer NPS and what are you doing? And then based on that answer, well, if it's a very poor answer, your stock probably goes down. And so you get this through. If it's a good answer, then we come through. And then if they say something like, and we're using evidence of customer NPS, and this is how we're doing it, that then actually then becomes something which will probably get tracked for the next few quarters, the next few years. Because until you lost customer share, it probably wasn't a want need. It was like, okay, would have want, but it was an issue. You've lost market share. Is now a need. Everyone needs to know how you're doing it and then how management reacts. And the market forces that information out somewhat, even if not within this. And it's actually probably a bit quicker than the annual, depending on how fast it moves. But it is a tug of war between the market and investors and users and management on that. And then when it becomes from a want to a need to a crisis, we try and solve that. If it's been solved in advance, it probably is actually in the entity's best interest. So if they were tracking, say, customer NPS all of this time, you wouldn't have had those issues in my view. So that's why it would have been helpful anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I accept the market does have a way of getting to that information, but equally, I think we need to be cognizant that not all professional users may have the same access. To
that is true. So it would be
having those
helpful.
Meetings. Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah. Great. Thank you for everyone for their comments on slide deck one. So we're now going to move on to, sorry,
if you want to some. It would be a good idea to attempt.
Do you want to? Are you going to? Or are you asking Matt to do it?
I'll try to do
okay.
A attempt.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Julia.
Yeah. To add. So obviously there were many very good detail points made and we will go away and work through everything you said. I think in terms of sort of my main takeaways and big themes that stand out, so there is all this discussion about how we sort of reconcile, well, there is a part of which is about user needs and wants, but there is also a part about through the eyes of management, but at the same time, meeting the information needs of users. And it sounds like a lot of that sort of question comes back to how to identify information that needs to be included in management commentary, so it's still through the eyes of management, but it does answer the right questions for users. So I suppose we need to go away and think about how these two aspects interact and how we can support identifying the right information that goes into management commentary while it's still through the eyes of management. So I suppose this is one big theme. The other big theme that stood out for me in this discussion is a whole question about how do we apply sort of the overall principles in the conceptual framework to the preparation of management commentary. And I suppose the big picture is that, yes, they still apply, but how we articulate it, how we explain, how we support completeness in management commentary, how we support neutrality or a balanced reporting in management commentary, and how we articulate it in drafting, so how we link the whole discussion about not having a lot of bias to the overall principle. I don't know if I'm making myself very clear, but I think there was a big theme around principles. Then I think we need to go back to the assumption about being single reporting package versus different reporting package and whether this has sort of any impact on our thinking. And then the other point was about editability and verifiability of information management commentary and whether and how we can support it in our guidance. And then lastly, well, probably I should have started with that, it sounded like there was a broad agreement with the challenges we have identified. But again, I've noted the concern about how we can support comparability while it's still through the eyes of management. So these are sort of my big themes, takeaways, but there are obviously lots of detail points to think through.
All done. Very good. Okay. So we'll move on to the second slide. Just before we do that, just introduce Rachel Nubley. So Rachel.
I just think one of the other points that came out was about making sure that you captured not things that are not recognised as well as recognised.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be really critical.
Okay. So Rachel oversees our project on primary financial statements, and there is some overlap between that project and the discussion we're about to have around alternative performance measures. So it would be great if Rachel could join us. So